Thank you, Archbishop McCollum. My name is Brian Hughes. I am the youngest of Ted and Helen's four children. Archdeacon McCollum, your kindness and presence has been truly remarkable and deeply appreciated. Our family also appreciates the service of Bishop Logan McMenemy, the clergy. I know your beloved parish administrator, Carol Ann Zanger, who's just terrific, parish staff, and the wonderful volunteers assisting today. We are humbled to have esteemed guests, Premier Horgan, Minister James, Minister Fleming, and councillors from the cities of Victoria and Saanich. We are touched by your presence and humanity. Helen, Keith, and our entire family, thank you all for being here. We have been reminded over the last few weeks of the innate goodness and common decency of people. And your presence here today is deeply, deeply appreciated. Mom and I and our entire extended family do not take you or your kindness for granted. Thank you. Of course, the great tragedy of today is that Ted had only just retired. He had big plans, maybe to work on a golf game, take up camping, or some such leisure activities, but it was not to be. But joking aside, I have the privilege of sharing my personal experience of having Ted's influence as a parent, as a father. You can imagine that he and Helen set the table for four successful lives. Helen and Ted were married 65 years ago in 1954. 3 years later, in 1957, along came David. In 1959, Sheila arrived, then Keith in 1961. And after those three dry runs, they finally did it right in 1963. We could not have been given a healthier or more stable foundation on which to build our lives. Today and forevermore, sadness takes a back seat to gratitude. Gratitude for him and how he influenced our lives in such a profound, positive, and everlasting way. Much has been written about his professional endeavors, community work, awards, and even honorary degrees. I'm pretty proud of him for all of that stuff, but it was his artfulness as a parent that I will mostly remember. So much of how I have parented came from he and my mom. I learned almost everything that I know about being a good person from he and Helen. It is cemented into the core of my being to always tell the truth, always do the right thing, always live beneath my means, always have consideration for those less fortunate, and there are no shortcuts to success. I learned these things more through his actions than through his words. In fact, I was rarely told what to do when I was a teenager or a young adult. I was rarely, if ever, lectured. I was never told how to raise our kids. And when I made the decision about leaving Victoria 35 years ago to pursue my career, as well as other life decisions, going back to school, changing jobs through the years, and so on, all I got was support and encouragement. The support was subtle, but powerful. No second guessing or attempts to re-engineer my decisions, just encouragement. And while it was never said, I knew that I had a 100% safety net if I ever faltered. And it's that last one that gave me the courage and confidence to chase the world head on. You see, it was his actions that made the lasting impressions with all of us. We know that Ted passed away at age 92. 92 isn't just a number or even an achievement per se. To me, it meant that he was here with us long enough to impact all of his grandchildren. I am so utterly grateful that our two children were able to know Ted and my mom into their early adult years. I remember a moment in 1997, vividly. My wife Liz, our weeks-old son Jake, and I had just moved to Oakland, California from Toronto. Helen and Ted paid us a visit. We took a picture in our backyard of Helen and Ted holding young Jake under an orange tree. Ted was 70, and Helen was 65. And I recall thinking at that moment, please, please let them grow old so that Jake too will benefit from their immense hearts and life lessons. Well, that prayer was answered because Jake, who is now 22, and his sister Eva, who's 19, got to know him and learn, as I did from him, about the way to live a life of goodness and decency, a successful life. Last week, they each had an opportunity to tell him what his life and example meant to them. They used words like compassion, kindness, hardworking, supportive, and always do the right thing. It was a golden moment, frozen in time, to know with clarity and certainty that his core values are forever cemented into the fiber of their core values. And undoubtedly, those very special and important virtues will be passed on to their and their cousins' children for generations to come. That is why Ted will live forever. His character and integrity lives within us and within them. And for this, I will be eternally grateful, not sad. And so on behalf of all of Ted's children and grandchildren, I will conclude as I did on January 17th when I said my final goodbyes to my dad by simply saying, thank you. Thank you, Dad. Thank you so very, very much for everything you have given us and left us with. Your time for eternal rest and peace has come. Thank you.
Helen, all the Hughes family, friends. These words of tribute to Ted Hughes are presented by Kathleen Keating and myself, both admirers and friends of Ted. Ted, Kathleen, and I go back more than 30 years to when he was Deputy Attorney General and asked each of us to work with him on the Access to Justice Commission he was undertaking. I was to be the lay voice on an otherwise panel of lawyers, and Kathleen, the writer. I remember the day Ted came into my office and we met for the first time. Instantly, I knew I wanted to work with this man, but I had no idea that it was the beginning of an amazing friendship between us and our families. Kathleen remembers the day she was first contacted by Ted. She was at home with a couple of young kids, and he said he'd gladly stop by her house to discuss the project if she could promise to bring some cookies and have them on hand. Many cookies and candies were shared over the years, but only recently did Kathleen find out how far back Ted's sweet tooth went. Vancouver lawyer Dick Hamilton says that his grandparents lived on the street where Ted grew up as a toddler. Ted was a frequent visitor to Dick's grandmother, who always had a fresh baked cookie to offer her young neighbor. This went on for some time until he showed up one day at the front door with a sign hung around on a string around his neck, "Don't feed Ted." I've been asked to speak to you about Ted's professional contributions as a lawyer, a judge, a civil servant, and a perennial arbiter of truth. But most of you know about these, if not from the news of the day, then from Craig McGinnis's excellent biography of the Mighty Hughes, or from the tributes that have flowed since Ted's passing. So we weren't sure how to approach this task because you already know that Ted practiced law in Saskatoon and then sat as a trial judge. You know that he left Saskatchewan and took up residence in Victoria, like so many retirees from the prairies. But you also know that Ted, at 53, was nowhere near ready for retirement, nor would he ever be. You may remember him as a high-profile deputy attorney general in BC in the 80s, or as BC's first conflict of interest commissioner. That was a role tailor-made for someone with his unerring instinct for what was and what was not appropriate conduct for public officials. He wasn't even yet officially in that position when then Premier Van der Zandt made what he would later call the greatest mistake of his life, asking Ted to look into allegations about brokering of the sale of Fantasy Gardens. We all know how that ended. Ted found that the Premier had mixed his public role as leader of the government with his private interests. Can you imagine? Can you picture our friends to the south of the border, how that would be transformed if they only had their own Ted Hughes? But beyond all his government positions, Ted said more than once that the most meaningful chapter of his career was his 5 years as chief adjudicator on the Indian Residential School's alternate dispute resolution process. This was groundbreaking work. Initiated by the Government of Canada, it gave former students a quicker out-of-court avenue for seeking compensation for abuses they had suffered in the residential schools. This was before the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and before we all came to know something of the history of these schools. It was an undertaking unique in the world, and it was Ted's leadership and commitment to justice for Aboriginal people that set the tenor that endures today in the process that succeeded, the one that Ted established and has resolved more than 38,000 claims. Ted set that standard from the beginning by listening to what Aboriginal people had to say. He consulted with the respected elders and asked for their help to design a training program for his first team of adjudicators. Kathleen was on that team, along with others who are here today. Ted made sure that they heard not only from people who would be kind and encouraging, but also from angry men and women who had suffered as children in residential schools and who had challenged Ted's team at the most basic level of their humanity. This was life-changing work, and Ted led the way with his unswerving sense of fairness and commitment to the integrity of the process. The depth of his dedication to justice for Aboriginal Canadians is apparent even from a quick glance at Ted's remarkable CV. In 1991, a Cree trapper had been fatally shot in the back by a neo-Nazi in Prince Albert when a judge ruled that the shooting was accidental and found that the shooter's white supremacist beliefs had nothing to do with the killing, the community was up in arms. Ted was asked by the Attorney General of Saskatchewan to head a commission of inquiry. He concluded that racism did indeed play a part in the killing and that the denial of racism in the justice system was a problem. Cross-cultural training for police officers was a recommendation. In 2005, Ted undertook for the Government of British Columbia a review of the province's child protection system. He saw the gross overrepresentation of Aboriginal children in care, and he began talking about the roots of child abuse and neglect and about the legacy of colonialism before many of us had made these connections. Our province's officer of the Representative for Children and Youth is a direct result of Ted's work. That work made him a natural choice to chair the public inquiry in Manitoba into the murder by her mother and stepfather of a 5-year-old Aboriginal girl, despite the involvement of the child welfare system since her birth. Ted was 84 years old when he took on that assignment, and 86 when he submitted his 3-volume report. Public hearings in Winnipeg meant weekly flights to and from Victoria. Especially in the winter, those flights were not reliable, and he would sometimes arrive at his hotel in the wee hours, but we'd be at his place in the morning, ready to listen to another 4 or 5 days of testimony. Winnipeg lawyer Sherry Walsh was Ted's commission counsel, and this is what she wrote. For 92 days of public hearings, Ted presided over the largest and most widely broadcast legal proceeding in Manitoba has ever seen. Throughout, he presented an unswerving face of justice and humanity, not only to the people who stood before him, but to all those in the community who followed the proceedings looking for answers and hope following a terrible tragedy. Ted provided those answers and went on to make recommendations aimed at improving the lives of the most vulnerable people in the community, particularly the lives of the Aboriginal children and their families. A friend once asked him, where had he come by this commitment to justice for Aboriginal Canadians? He told her about something that had happened in his courtroom many years ago when he was a judge in Saskatoon. A young Aboriginal man was before him for sentencing, and when Ted asked if he had anything to say, the young man let him have it. With some profanity, he asked by what right Ted felt he could pass judgment on someone like him without knowing the vaguest idea about what his life had been. Ted didn't react defensively, and he didn't scold the young man for his breach of decorum. He listened, and he learned something. As a trial judge, he knew he was limited in what he could do to direct the divide between the young man's world and his own. So for that time being, he handed that task over to Helen, and she ran with it. Eventually, as we have seen, he found his own opportunities to make a difference. But child welfare and justice for Aboriginal Canadians were not his only concerns. Many of his high-profile reports and rulings were rooted in his deeply held respect for politicians, public servants, and law enforcement, and his equally firm belief that they need to be held to the highest standards of conduct if they were to maintain the public trust that is essential in the preservation of our way of life. Throughout his career, he spoke truth to power, and in so doing, he demonstrated the power of his own integrity and of his commitment to speak for those who needed his voice. We will miss him.
Helen, Keith, Brian, and the extended Hughes family, we are and friends of Ted, we are here today to say goodbye and to celebrate the life of a distinguished Canadian, the Honorable Ted Hughes. My name is Ken Fike, and Ted and I met in Saskatchewan probably close to 50 years ago. And I'm honored to speak about Ted and a very dear friend for many years. Ted Hughes was a great and wonderful man. While Ted did not avoid attention, he did not seek it. Never ostentatious, His measure was to do what he could, as well as he could, to make things as right as he could. Ted is the embodiment of the motto of the Order of Canada. He desired a better country, and he made major contributions to ensure Canada is a better country. Ted was invested as an officer of the Order of Canada in 2003 after having been a member for a number of years. Ted married Helen on October 16, 1954, and what an incredible couple. Helen is also a member of the Order of Canada. Together and separately, they have made Canada a better country. On hearing of Ted's passing a couple of weeks ago, Roy Romano, the former Premier of Saskatchewan, described Ted, quote, as a towering legal scholar, an interpreter of the law. He was a devotee of the rule of law and one of Canada's most outstanding citizens, who added much to our nation's well-being. He will be missed, but his devotion to Canada will be long remembered, end of quote. One of my earlier contacts with Ted occurred in Ottawa. On one of our first trips to the capital city, my wife Dawn and I wanted to go to the House of Commons to hear question period. So we didn't know we needed a pass from our member of parliament. I'm not sure if we knew who our member of parliament was in those days. Ted happened to walk through the lobby, and I hailed him. "Come with me," says Ted. "I'm on my way to visit the chief." Well, Ted introduced us to the former Prime Minister John Diefenbaker, and after a few minutes, the Honorable John gave us passes to question period, and Ted took the time to ensure that we found our seats and were able to observe question period. Over the years, we saw Ted extend a helping hand in many ways, big and small, to so many people. Ted was a modern-day Renaissance man, educated, knowledgeable, and talented. He operationalized the term, speak truth to power. Fearless in his pursuit of the truth and a giant in the field of accountability, his contributions to health, to the Indigenous community, to academia, to public administration, to his church, and the community where he lived, strengthened the fabric of our Canadian society. During the 60s, 70s, and 80s in Saskatchewan, Ted chaired several municipal and provincial boards and commissions, including such hot, underline the word hot, topics such as the salaries and pensions of MLAs, the role and function of rural hospitals, the role and function of elementary and secondary schools. He was chair of Saskatoon City Hospital, president of the Saskatchewan Healthcare Organization, and president of the Canadian Hospital Association. Ted believed politics is an honorable calling and was universally respected by governments of all political persuasions. In the late 1970s, controversies around the Saskatchewan Cancer Treatment Program almost defeated the government. As the Deputy Minister of Health, my job to advise the best way out of this mess was to set up a total new organization and to appoint Ted Hughes as the board chair. Having such a respectable leader was immediately approved by then Premier Alan Blakeney. Soon, even the opposition parties agreed that the new cancer program met international standards. We came to know Ted and Helen as friends when we moved to Victoria in 1984. They had moved here 4 years earlier. And during our first year, Ted and Helen invited us to their family Christmas and similarly invitations to their cottage, where Ted spent hours driving his boat, pulling our two boys on water skis. Locally, he served as chair of Wanda Fuca Hospitals, the Victoria Hospital Foundation campaign to equip the new Royal Jubilee Hospital, to co-chair the Coalition to End Homelessness, and many others. While at the same time, he conducted major works for the governments of Canada, the Yukon, the Northwest Territories, and Manitoba. Ted's contributions were recognized with numerous awards, three honorary degrees, Doctor of Laws degrees, conferred by Royal Roads University, the University of Victoria, and the University of Saskatchewan. As we say goodbye to Ted, Ted Hughes will be remembered as a true Canadian patriot. However, as with many of you, I considered him my friend Ted. He will be missed. We will miss our friends. We will miss talking politics and discussing what is or should be the right decision and the right thing to do. As we say goodbye to Ted, I summarize Ted's greatness with the words of Craig MacInnes in The Mighty Hughes. Craig states, quote, "He swims in a sea of superlatives, all earned. With his enormous capacity and appetite for work, his unshakable and unfashionable belief that politics should be an honorable profession, his addiction to public service, and his insistence that equality means little if it doesn't include women and Indigenous Canadians. He has fairly been called Canada's moral authority and the most credible man in British Columbia." Rudyard Kipling described such a man in his classic poem, If. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, you will be a man, my son. Ted Hughes was such a man.